This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello there, how you doing? It's Kevin Riley here and welcome to Irish Time here on the Manawatu People's Radio in the County Manawatu. And it's a Friday morning, and it's not a bad morning. The sun has been shining like it did yesterday, but unfortunately I think the weather's going to change yet again, you know. So enjoy your day, really, you know, while the sun's out. I mean, it's still not bitterly cold, but it's still pretty cool. But the sun makes you, just put you in a different frame of mind. You know, it's all psychological. Anyway, what have we got here? This is various stuff out of Irish papers. We'll start with on here. Musician Andy Irvine, he's reunited with his 16,000 euro instruments that went missing en route to Copenhagen. Andy was in this. We interviewed him here. I was really surprised. He's a really big player in the traditional music field and travels the world, in fact. And he was here in New Zealand, and I rang him up of all things. I got a phone number and just gave him a ring, and he got back to me. Would you believe it? He got back to me. And he said he'd happy to come in. And he turned up, him and a guy called Paul Turner, who's an Ilion pipe player here from Palmerston North. And it was just, it was really interesting. I was kind of blown away because this guy is, you know, famous, make no mistake about it, and he's a class musician. Anyway, we'll get started here. The singer-songwriter thanked everyone who helped me or shown concern about my missing instruments. Irish musician Andy Irvine has said that two of his instruments that went missing en route to Copenhagen last month have been returned to him. The singer-songwriter wrote on Facebook last month that his guitar, bouzouki, and mandola, believed to be worth over 16,000 euros, failed to arrive at his destination in Denmark, where he was due to perform. He had flown from Dublin to Frankfurt with Lufthansa, then on to Copenhagen, and on to, is it Allenberg? Well, I presume that's in Sweden, Swedish Airlines Services, SAS. And it's sweet that this afternoon, the 80-year-old said he received an email from SAS on Monday to say that his instruments had been found. They were rushed to Dublin and delivered to my door yesterday evening. I can't tell you how it feels to have them back. I have a permanent smile on my face, and so do they. Thanks to the Providence and all kind people who give their time and energy, Irvine also gives his heartiest thanks to everyone who has helped me or shown concern about my missing instruments. Because I remember reading this out to you there quite a few weeks ago, possibly, you know, when they went missing originally. And he was kind of, you know, heartbroken because he'd been quite attached to these instruments. He'd had them for years and years and years. And now what have we got here? This is unusual. Giant injured tortoise on track causes train delays in southeast England. This is southeast England. A large tortoise on the track caused trains to come to a halt and a number of delays for a number of hours in southeast England. The Great Anglia Railway Company reported that afternoon trains between the city of Norwich and Stansted Airport were stopped for more than an hour due to a giant tortoise. The operator first announced the line was blocked by animals on the line, with a number of passengers given seats on alternative routes free of charge. One passenger on the train to Norwich, Diana Eckers, said she couldn't believe her eyes when she saw the tortoise. It's a giant tortoise, by the way. She posted a photograph on Twitter of the tortoise standing on the track, and the train company said that it was still alive but injured. The tortoise shell appeared to have a large gash on the top of its shell. A Greater Anglican customer advisor later wrote that the tortoise was injured and had been taken to a specialist team for treatment. We have been informed that he will make a full recovery. Isn't that kind of neat? It's a real good photograph, and it is a big tortoise, you know, probably like, you know, Galapagos Islands one. It's huge. Didn't say where it came from. Interesting. Anyway, on the other side of everything, what have we got here? This is about man arrested by the police in Northern Ireland after, you know, dog napping, basically. It's just, I just get outraged when I see that people treat animals so poorly. Okay, police believe the animals were smuggled into Northern Ireland from the Republic and were destined to be sold in England and Scotland. Police in Northern Ireland seized 57 puppies, three adult dogs and a cat in the Belfast Harbour Estate yesterday evening following an ongoing investigation. A 44-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of a number of offences, including fraud by false representation and possession of articles for use in fraud. He is still in custody. A quantity of cash was also seized during the organised crime operation. The seized puppies are an assortment of breeds, including Golden Retriever, Cockapoo, Miniature Terrier, French Bulldog, American Bulldog, Cocker Spaniel, Dachshunds and a Roan Spaniel. They are currently being cared for and being examined by a vet, and the public is asked not to contact police, offering to rehome them at this time. Isn't it just shocking, really? Police believe that the animals were legally imported into Northern Ireland from the Republic and were destined to be sold, like I said, there in England and Scotland. Police are absolutely committed to tackling the smuggling of illegal commodities through Northern Ireland's ports. Most recent seizures by the organised crime unit have been in relation to illegal drugs, Detective Inspector Conor Sweeney said. However, as this operation has shown, drugs are not the only items being traded illegally. Smuggling is often conducted by sophisticated cross-border organised criminal groups. Small groups will not discriminate when it comes to the commodity being smuggled, should they be drugs, cigarettes, people, or in this case, animals. I use the word commodity, as this is how criminal gangs view the people and animals they smuggle. Commodities. Terrible. It's a kind of a word I remember from the, you know, free market sort of ideology that was all the rage way back there in the 90s. But it got there. Sweeney said that those involved in puppy smuggling do not care about the horrendous impact it can have both on the animals and the victims who innocently buy them as family pets. He urged anyone with information about any illegal activity to contact the police as soon as possible. Yeah, it is. I just think it's shocking, personally. And what I got, this is... This is a bilingual road signs planned for West Belfast. Planning is underway for the provision of a bilingual road traffic signs and street signs in West Belfast. The Department for Infrastructure has confirmed that these proposed changes relate to highway code signs such as stop or give way, rather than the street names which were controlled by local councils, but they're still going ahead with them. It follows controversy surrounding Sinn Féin-based bilingual stop signs that were installed across North Belfast last week. The homemade signage included a Sinn Féin logo and the word stop written in both English and Irish. They were deemed problematic due to their location and the political affiliation. Reacting by the time, DUP Assembly Member Brian Kingston said the signs were nothing more than a transparent attempt to hijack road safety for party politicking. Well, that's your entitled your opinion, Mr. Kingston. He also added that the party would have been perfectly aware that the inclusion of dual language on the signs just added another further political dimension. Well, I mean, there's the English language and there's the Irish language. I just don't see the problem here. It's just like I've been in submissions in the past to our local council and annual plans and stuff about we should have some of our street signs, particularly in the city centre, in Māori as well as obviously English. And I still pushed, but it didn't go anywhere. Nobody seemed to be that interested in it. But one day it will happen and we'll go into Māori language underneath it or whatever. Which is not a bad sign. I mean, it's kind of, we get a lot of mileage out of the fact that we're kind of, you know, multicultural and that Tirio is kind of a major player in the political scene today. And I just don't see the problem myself. You know, we're not asking for the whole country or the whole city for that matter, but just basically the city centre itself. And it adds a bit of difference to the city centre. It makes it a lot more interesting as, you know, people from out of town sort of come along and see stuff like that. It's just like most European cities or, you know, countries have bilingual street signs. So why not? I mean, just a point of interest. And it's not a huge cost either. That's the thing that I find that kind of difficult to understand why they wouldn't go ahead with something like that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm going to still keep battling away for that if we can. Reacting at the time, what did we say there? Infrastructure Minister Mr. John O'Dowd affirmed his commitment to the continued rollout of Irish of the Irish language in the city's Galtack Quarter following a meeting with representatives. Mr. O'Dowd said, I was pleased to meet with the representative to discuss my department's commitment to the Irish language and to review the progress that had been made in recent years to roll out bilingual signage on public transport and streets in West Belfast. I mean, you've got to start somewhere. The minister added there had been requests for road traffic signs in the west of the city, saying that he was pleased to hear that my officials had been working to qualify the cost for a proposed pilot scheme for the proposal of bilingual traffic signs in the Galtack Quarter. The Galtack is the Irish-speaking quarter, by the way. Bilingual signs were introduced on the West Belfast Glider route. Glider is the big buses they have there. Between Millfield and McKirsty's Road, way back there in 2021. Former Minister Nicola Mallon said the move tied in with the new decade, new approach, language commitment, and that the signage give the Irish the signage give the Irish language the visibility it deserves. Same as the Maori language gets the visibility it deserves, and if they do the street signs at some future date. My department and Translink work closely with companies, the government, to implement this important work, which was welcomed by the local community. I'm keen for more to be done. And Translink is now being given consideration to bilingual audio that can be introduced on the West Belfast Glider service. So it's going to be, we're now approaching Rangitiki Street. It's going to be in Māori as well as in English. Interesting. But it will come here sometime in the future, unfortunately. But, you know, New Zealand is such a conservative country in many respects. I think they should just go ahead. There's very little cost yet, and I don't think there'd be a huge outcry. I would like to think not anyway, you know, for something as straightforward and as, you know, interesting, and just gives the city another dimension, really. We could be leaders here, because I've made inquiries when I started, you know, talking to the council about bilingual street signs, and there aren't any in New Zealand. You know, because I think it's Akaroa, where it's in French, you know, as well as English, I think. But yeah, I think that was, you know, this lady I spoke to at the University of Waikato. He was, a doctor or a specialist in this area, as it were. Anyway, this is DART. This is the railway. It's like run through Dublin. Real delays after passengers were forced to open the doors to walk on the tracks. Rail services near Dublin were disrupted for a time on Sunday after some passengers forced open the doors of a DART train and walked on the tracks. Services between Dalkey and Bray had to be suspended for a period of time to what Irish Rail described as a dangerous act. A group of passengers disembarked the train after they faced a delay on the line. The incident caused knock-on delays. Much it would be, you know, you've got people on the tracks, it's going to slow everything else down. But a lot of people only think of themselves, not the public good or, you know, the greater good. Irish Rail said that a southbound DART was awaiting a clear platform at Bray before proceeding at the County Wicklow station. It said that some passengers forced open doors and walked onto the track. Irish Rail said the line had to be stopped in both directions while staff and the police cleared people off the line. The worsening delays caused resulted in concern and distress among other customers who also had to leave the DART and a following DART behind. So they began to leave this DART and the following DART behind, so they all just took off. The line was closed, like I said. Irish Rail said the initial action turned a delay outside Bray of just over a few minutes into one that stretched for 2 hours. Many people who were travelling to the County Wicklow town on Sunday to watch the Bray Air display, which was held for the first time since 2019, were held up and unhappy. The Irish Rail offered his apologies to customers affected by the delays. But it was, and yeah, so it's a delay, but you know, you just don't get off the train. Usually let you know that there's something amiss and that it's only going to take a few minutes while they sort something out. But no, people just bailed out, forced open the doors, and took to the tracks and just walked, and which caused further delays, like I said. Anyway, just talking about drink driving here. More than 1,000 drivers were caught speeding on Irish roads over the weekend. More than 1,000 drivers were caught speeding on Irish roads over the past couple of days, and have now been issued with fines by the police. speeds of 170 kilometres an hour were detected over the weekend. Most vehicles monitored were driving within the speed limit. Garney said on Twitter that a total of 467 drivers were detected as speeding on Saturday and 544 on a Sunday. This was out of 116,000 vehicles monitored on Irish roads on Saturday and 96,000 there on Sunday. On Saturday, the highest speeds detected ranged from 108 to 154 to 120 in Kildare, County Cavan and around Dublin City. Yesterday's speeds ranged from 90 in Offaly, County Offaly, and over 80 in County Meath. I think the speed limit there is a bit stricter than what we are here, I believe. A driver was also arrested in Kildare after being caught driving at 164 kilometres an hour in a 120-mile zone. The driver was found to be driving without insurance and the vehicle was seized. Gardaí have cautioned drivers to take care of the road over the bank holiday weekend. So that was interesting, to say the least. I read somewhere, I think this was Italy, where the police are clamping down on sort of the mafiosi, the gangs, and they took one of the cars, a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, or some, a really, really £180,000 or £280,000, you know, racing machine, really. And it's now used as a police car. You know, they do that, they get on the autobahns, et cetera, et cetera, to catch speeding drivers, because the cars that they were using, which were Skoda, I believe, were just, they were kind of prepped up, but they couldn't compete with the cars that were zooming past them at 150, 160 miles. This is miles, not kilometres, an hour. And so they've got this car and it does the job for them. And I think a lot of the police, some of the, you know, the punters are surprised when they're zooming past and suddenly this Ferrari takes off. It only cost them £10,000 apparently, just to, you know, just put on, you know, change the coating to make it police signs on it. And that's, you know, it didn't cost them anything. It was stolen property or whatever, and they just took it. And I just thought that wasn't such a bad idea, you know, to keep on the motorways if we had any issues to look at here. But I don't think we're in that anywhere near that league in New Zealand. Anyway, here we go. Fianna Fáil Senator, this is about Dublin. Fianna Fáil Senator has called on Michael D. Higgins to express Irish support for Ukraine after Sabrina, that's his wife, sent a letter to the paper. Sabrina Higgins, in a letter to the Irish Times, called both Ukraine and Russia to agree to a ceasefire and negotiations. Fianna Fáil Senator has called on Michael D. Higgins, the President, to make a public statement to express clearly the Irish support for Ukraine following viewpoints in a letter by Sabrina Higgins that the Russian ambassador said makes sense. This is the Russian ambassador in Dublin. In a letter to the Irish Times there on Wednesday, Sabrina Higgins wrote that the war will continue until the world persuades President Vladimir Putin and Zelensky of Ukraine to agree to a ceasefire and negotiate. Yuri Filatov, I think his name is. The Russian ambassador to Ireland said he agreed with the points made by the Higgins in the letter. In an interview with the Irish Times, he said, "We are all against war and that the suggestion of peace talks tallies with Russians' position." I don't think Russians' position is actually interested in peace. Ukrainian MP, however, called the letter uninformed and said it is not enough for one side to want peace. It needs to be mutual. I agree. Keir Rudrick told News Talks the Hard Shoulder programme, that's in Dublin. When you look at the way how Russia behaved for the last 8 years, when you look at the last 5.5 months, you will understand that there is no way of peaceful negotiations as possible. These talks are extremely dangerous, because basically what is written in the letter is, let's make peace. So we will allow the bully, allow aggressive country, the country behaviour, to get away with what they have done. Yeah, well, let's kind of have some sort of sympathy for that view, because the Russians, you know, under Putin are just going to carry on as usual. You know, I think it's going to take something spectacular to actually stop them from, you know, just to get out of Ukraine. You know, I mean, they're occupying a foreign country, even though there's this big dispute about it was Russia at one time or one period or another. It's just like New Zealand was part of Australia, you know, one long, long, long time ago, sort of all part of, you know, the government of New South Wales. This is way back before the treaty, in fact, but it was all part of, it was all seen as one country, so it was a long, long time ago, but it was kind of claimed by, I don't even know if there was an Australian government then, it was probably the New Zealand South Wales government. But anyway, You can check that out. Anyway, the big news in both Northern Ireland and in the Southern Ireland has been the death of the late David Trimble. The Taoiseach, the President, and the UK, this is the President of the Republic of Ireland, Higgins, and the UK Prime Minister were among those in attendance at the church. Mourners attending the funeral of David Trimble heard the actions of the former Northern Ireland First Minister allowed a generation of Northern Ireland to grow up in relative peace. That's true. Hume, who jointly won the Peace Prize with the late SDLP leader John Hume, died last week following an illness. The former leader of the Ulster Unionist Party played a key role in forging the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. The Taoiseach Michael Martin said that UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson were among those at Harmony Hill Presbyterian Church there in Lisburn, just out of Belfast, for his funeral this afternoon. President D. Higgins and the former Taoiseach Bertie Hearn were also in attendance at the church. D.U. Peter, leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, Sinn Féin Vice President Michelle O'Neill, former Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams and former Northern Ireland First Minister Paul Gavin and Northern Ireland Secretary Sheila Vara, I think that's how you say that, were also at the service. A crowd of roughly 100 people gathered outside the church to hear the service, which we relayed on a loudspeaker. His wife, Daphne Trimble, took her place in the front row of the church as the coffin was carried in by their sons and daughters. Trimble was the First Minister from 1998 to 2002, and he was the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, like I said, from 1995 to 2005. Political leaders, past and present, have paid tribute to the 77-year-old's contribution to peace in Northern Ireland. Dean Goodson, the member of the House of Lords who wrote Trimble's biography, said he was the most substantial figure thrown up by unionism since the foundation of Northern Ireland in 1921. He was a big player, to say the least. In death, he has finally been afforded the respect and love from all communities on this island that he deserves and did not always receive in the height of his powers. That's true. He was called a traitor and threatened with being shot by a whole lot of people. The Reverend Fiona Forbes told the funeral service this afternoon that the large group of people gathered to pay their respects bears witness to Trimble's impact on the political landscape and the legacy he left all of us. Of course, we come to remember an academic, a party leader, a peacemaker, a Nobel laureate, the first to serve in the role of First Minister in the new Northern Ireland Executive, established as part of the Good Friday Agreement. But he also come to remember a husband, a father, and a grandfather, a brother, brother-in-law, and an uncle. Trimble's eldest son, Richard, thanked the public for their sympathies and kind words following the death of his father. The Reverend Charles McMullen told the service that Trimble's actions allowed a generation of people in Northern Ireland to grow up in relative peace, like we said earlier. He said he hoped the funeral service could be used to inspire redoubled efforts to resolve political differences in Northern Ireland. So far, it hasn't. Can we use this service today in a fitting tribute to one of the great leaders of our island? With courage, pragmatism, and generosity of spirit, many of our politicians rather engaged wholeheartedly in resolving the outstanding issues surrounding the Northern Ireland Protocol. That's what the problem is there. If it wasn't that, it would have been something else. The Ulster Unionist Party, the Democratic Unionist Party, rather, are the ones that are holding out here. Most of the other elected representatives just want to form a government and govern the people, you know, bring out sort of legislation and improve the lives of the people of Northern Ireland, you know, given the sort of the pretty tough economic times that they're facing at present, you know, and things are going to get worse because I heard the Bank of England has banged up their interest rates and recession is on the cards and that will impact on Northern Ireland as well. So I think some of these political leaders should actually, you know, get their heads out of the clouds and start sort of, you know, dealing with real people, you know, who live everyday lives as opposed to having, you know, well-paid jobs, nice housing, cars, and comparatively well-off themselves compared to the people they claim to represent. Anyway, statements from the former US President Bill Clinton was also read. Clinton said Trimble's lifetime of service helped bring peace to Northern Ireland and that he made the hard choices over the politically expedient ones because he believed future generations deserved to grow up free from violence and hatred. His faith in the democratic process allowed him to stand up to strong opposition, like I said, death threats, and this wasn't just to him himself, it was to his family. His legacy will endure and up for all those who are living better lives today because of him. Ahern last week said he did not believe the Good Friday Agreement would have been achievable without Trimble's efforts. The former Taoiseach said Trimble never blinked and that he stood up to the wider unionist community as part of the peace process. If David didn't bring the unionist party with him, we didn't have an agreement. The agreement was four parts, and that was loyalism, that was unionism, republicanism, and that was nationalism, and we needed all four. Tomorrow, the Stormont Assembly reconvene for a special sitting to pay tribute to David Trimble. They did have a session, but that was it. It was lambasted by some of the, you know, other unions people. They had a lot of respect for Trimble, but they weren't happy about, you know, the government, as it were, getting back together again, even if it was on that special occasion. And this is of interest to the people of Northern Ireland in particular. Boris Johnson has left his party with a tough choice: a leader to the right or the hard right. He was supposed to be the Conservative answer to Tony Blair. His landslide general election victory was not short of the time that Labour's triumph was there in 1979, when Tony Blair sort of romped home with the Labour Party. In the same way that Blair co-opted Cool Britannia and the renaissance of British pride of the midnight, Boris Johnson's eccentric boosterism captured the hearts of a nation yearning for change. He made mincemeat of the opposition and purged the doubters in his own party from the cabinet. Fearless as a campaigner, there was talk in the beginning that he would reign for a decade. But while Blair's downfall took almost 10 years, the Iraq War and a lackluster 2005 election result, Johnson has barely outlasted Theresa May. Not very long, like two and a half, 3 years. Presiding over the crisis, he was just presiding over crisis like a tough Tasmanian devil. His time in government will be remembered as a time of chaos. Government indecision over lockdowns led to the most recorded COVID-related deaths in Europe. The hard Brexit, which had been pursued, has soured Britain's relationship with the EU and threatened peace on the island of Ireland. The deluge of sleaze, which was to follow Johnson and his cabinet, from corruption allegations to pandemic rule-breaking, has undermined public trust in government and its institutions. Johnson hoped his unambiguous leadership of the Ukraine-Russian crisis would give his popularity a boost in the same way his early vaccination rollout did last year. But the weight of his poor character and inability to change proved too much for his colleagues to bear. And he was just a natural-born liar, you know what I mean? I think he had problems with the truth. His resignation speech will surely go down as one of the most remarkable pieces of political theatre in British history. He apologised for nothing, self-aggrandised, and declined to thank any of his co-workers except his security detail, whom he praised for never leaking. The implication was clear. The problem wasn't that he had misbehaved, but that he had been ratted out. What's more troubling was that his replacement is likely to be a continuity figure. Both Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss held the most senior cabinet position in his government, enabled his worst tendencies. The implication for this for Ireland would be a severe. As foreign minister, it was Truss who introduced the Northern Ireland Protocol, but which, if passed, will tear up Britain's agreement with the Irish Sea border as though it were a Johnson marriage certificate. It is. And she's way in front at present in, the leadership of the Conservative Party, which has been, you know, the leader, the new Prime Minister will be decided by 160,000 Conservative members who live basically in the southeast of England and who are usually, you know, basically all white, retired and well off. But they will be sort of, forming the new government, the new Prime Minister. And she is way in front. I think this other guy, because he's got a, you know, that's my personal view here. I think he's got an Indian heritage. I think that could sort of go against him. And he was also the Chancellor of the Exchequer. I don't think they like some of the acts that he brought into government. You know, some of the policies that he was talking about. He's against tax rises at present, until, you know, not too distant future. Because he thinks the government in the country can't afford it. And I sort of got some sympathy for that after listening to the news this morning when it said that recession is nearly a dead certainty for the UK by the end of the year. So I think whoever takes over, you know, the leadership, they've got their work cut out, to say the least. Anyway, that's enough for me this week. So we'll catch you again, okay? And you take care and enjoy yourself over the weekend. And hopefully this weather may last a little bit longer. But a sunshine, like I said, good for the soul, good for your mind. Anyway, be kind to one another yet again, and just enjoy yourself. All right? See you later. Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.